You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off this Friday in France, and the U.S. women's national soccer team will be chasing rare back-to-back titles. This U.S. team's the most successful of all the teams in women's international soccer, with 3 Women's World Cup titles, 4 Olympic gold medals, and a whole lot more. Andre Markowitz teaches comparative politics and German studies at the University of Michigan, but he's here today as a serious student of soccer, or as the rest of the world calls it, football. His newest book is Women in American Soccer and European Football, Different Roads to Shared Glory. Welcome back. So good to see you again.
Thank
Andre.
You. So nice to be here.
Why'd you choose this topic for your book?
I've always been interested, actually, in the issue of democracy, meaning to me, democracy is a constant and never-ending process of inclusion and of including formerly excluded people, or not only people, actually now my most recent work is actually on animals and animal rescue. And I was always interested, of course, in sports and soccer. And so the predecessor to this book was actually a book called Sportista, Female Fandom in the United States. I think you had me on for
it. We talked about it
exactly,
here.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so that then propelled me to look at soccer in a world in which it was, until the early 1970s, totally marginalized. And in some ways, it still remains that. But I was interested in how this is part of a larger process of inclusion and democratization.
All right.
And I see the world actually is getting better, not worse.
Well, so that's a good thing. I love that choice in the title, Different Roads to Shared Glory. And certainly, soccer has a vastly different cultural association here in America as compared to how Europeans view football. It's so much newer here in this country compared to Europe. Did that give women here a chance to really make their mark on the sport?
Yes, but differently. The story of the book is basically as follows. American women actually enter into a space which is really completely unoccupied. The word soccer is not known and it's not common until the 1980s, 1990s. And so women actually in the United States are not only pioneers as women in the sport of soccer, but in fact, for the culture of soccer, meaning that if you were to write a book on American soccer, history of American soccer, you simply could not write it without having 2 or 3 major chapters on the women. They are the carriers of the sport.
And you think of the stars. You think of names like Mia Hamm and Brandi Chastain and Abby Wambach and so many more. People know those names.
Absolutely. Julie Foudy,
yeah,
who is a major public figure in the United States. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Carly Lloyd.
And
stop and think. Could many people name any of the men's players?
I don't know many. Certainly people who are into the men's world, certainly.
But these women are known to the general public.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Maybe Landon Donovan would be,
mm-hmm,
or maybe...
You're reaching.
Because I could name you a lot of men,
yeah,
but I'm just not sure who among them would be known to the rest,
yes,
of the public.
Agreed.
So contrary to this, in Europe, the women enter this world, which, of course, was completely occupied rather than open by arguably the most male construct of anything other than the Catholic Church. So, in fact, the struggle is different, but in both cases very serious. In the United States, the struggle is for women to establish importance in something that Americans didn't care about. In Europe, it's for women to struggle into something which, in fact, men are completely live, die, and eat and drink and do everything.
They do.
And
they
so
do.
That is, yeah, a very, very, very different trajectory. But my argument in the book is that by virtue of the national teams and by virtue of the World Cup, there has, in fact, emerged a kind of convergence of the two, meaning that this World Cup, for the first time, will be a fairly big deal also in Europe. The French are into it. The Germans are into it. The English, who completely, I mean, a couple of years ago, this was seen as yet another form of American deformation, another form of America subverting our beautiful culture. You know, American girls playing, what is that? I mean, it was completely seen as not only kind of inappropriate, but in fact, even dangerous, undermining something. This has changed. So the England team has, since their good showing in the previous World Cup in Vancouver, this has become a big deal, and people will follow it. And so, in fact, on the national scale, women's soccer has arrived. Where it has not arrived, and where I see it struggling for the next 50 or so years, is on the club level.
Club level, okay.
Yeah, meaning, look, on the national level, it's very simple. We have a ready-made fan base. It's called nationalism. Everybody feels American. Everybody feels German. Everybody feels English.
So whether it's the Olympics, whether it's the Gold Cup, we're all going to cheer.
Exactly.
USA.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's what I call about soccer in America, not only women's soccer, what I call the Olympianization of the sport, meaning that actually in America, unlike in Europe and in Latin America, in the United States, soccer is Olympianized. It's only big every 4 years for the World Cup.
It's now, not like clubs where you go to Europe and you live and die by the club you support.
And unfortunately, it's even what you say is almost literally true.
It is true.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so on that level, the women's game is still nowhere near it. Basically, again, I have in the book that women's club games in Europe attract 1,400 people, 1,500. In the U.S., it's slightly higher, but not much. But there's a very interesting outlier, which are the Portland Thorns. I call it in the book, Portland is the epicenter of the world's women's club soccer. They draw 14 to 16,000 fans every club game, which I find fascinating. I have to research it.
Yeah, so that's to be determined. And yeah. One might argue, if you're talking about women's basketball, is this pretty similar?
It's similar. It's a very good analogy. The women's basketball in the United States is analogous to the women's football in Europe, meaning that the women in America entered into a space that was completely occupied by men. However, everyone knew about basketball. So, in fact, it's a different cultural mission. In soccer, the American women literally created and were the pioneers of an entire sport. In basketball, the women are entering a hitherto completely male world, very complicated, but also, of course, trailblazers in their own right, but in a different context. So it's a very different mission that they really have.
Interesting. I do have to ask you about the news. A women's national U.S. team recently sued U.S. Soccer Federation for gender discrimination. They're saying, wait a minute, institutionalized sexism has meant they're not paid as much, their training conditions are not as good as the men's team. What do you make of this lawsuit?
Oh, I think the lawsuit is long overdue. Or put it differently, I think it shouldn't even come to the lawsuit. Here's the story. The national teams are owned, quote unquote, by the federations, which means that they're not part of a market. Okay. So since the men's and the women's teams are employees, again, in quotation marks, of the federation or are paid by the federation, there's absolutely no reason that they should not be paid exactly the same. Apart from the fact that indeed, in this case, as you in your introduction showed, the American women are far and away the most successful in the world, the men, let's just say, less so.
Yes.
But apart from that, apart from that, they should be paid exactly the same and have the exact same condition. Unlike in the club world. See, in the club world, that's a market story.
Sure.
So clearly, if you play for the Portland Thorn, you cannot exact the same amounts of billions of dollars as if you play for Manchester United or Barcelona. It's just a different story. But in terms of the
national team,
which is the team of a federation, the remuneration should be exactly level.
Do you know if the national teams for women in Europe, do they have similar complaints?
Same complaints. Mm. All same similar complaints.
So but the American women are leading the way here.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. The American women are leading the way here too. Basically, in Europe too, it took a long time for it to be taken seriously, and in some ways it still isn't, as I argue in the book. For example, to this day in Germany, they always refer to Frauenfußball, which of course is women's football, but they never call it Männerfußball. It's just Fußball.
Mm-hmm.
So it's understood to be the game is in fact a men's world.
And then you put that little icing on the cake
exactly.
If it's played by
exactly.
The women.
Exactly, exactly.
You want to go out on a limb and make a prediction? Do you think the U.S. women will successfully defend their World Cup title?
They should, and God knows I hope they will. But, you know, it's a big, big thing to play in the bastion of a very good country, and I'm very, very seriously considering the French to be a major contender. They're very good, and they're playing at home, and in the home field advantage in soccer is actually bigger than in any other team sport, so I think the French are very serious contenders.
University of Michigan professor Andre Markovitz, his newest book is Women in American Soccer and European Football, Different Roads to Shared Glory. It's always great talking football with you. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. Thank you.